Hi, folks. This is Scott from buyandselldvc.com. If you've been thinking of becoming a Disney Vacation member, we highly advise you check out our Facebook group at Disney Vacation Club Resales DVC. Again, that's Disney Vacation Club Resales DVC. We have the longest-running Facebook group dedicated to purchasing into the Disney Vacation Club via resales. Again, Disney Vacation Club Resales DVC, and we look forward to seeing you in there.
Hello, welcome to the WW Review. I'm your host, Chris Malik, and I'm joined by some good friends returning to the show. We have Ann and Chris Young. How are you guys again?
Good, Chris. Thanks.
Doing great.
I'm looking at you guys. I see the Christmas tree up behind you. We're in December. It's a great time of year. Do you guys have any snow up by you? Are you guys?
Is it white? Not today, but last weekend we were actually in Kansas City, and on the way back we ran into some snow, and I think just north of Kansas City they had up to 4 inches. So yeah, we just really haven't seen anything in Sedalia where we live.
The whole country last weekend, the weekend after Thanksgiving, that Sunday, that Monday combination, that just walloped half the country into a deep freeze that we weren't prepared for just yet. It was like, whoa, we went from fall to deep January, it seems like, overnight. But anyways, sure. I see the Christmas tree. Before we talk about the show, and we've got Ann and Chris Young, so you're like, huh, is it a trip report? It is, and it's another Amtrak vacation, but we've got some Disney community tie-in here on this trip report. You guys, I'd like you to share, you guys have been to Walt Disney World at the holiday time, correct? You guys have been down there?
Yeah, we have.
Okay, share us a memory. What is your favorite memory, or... Wait, we can even go the opposite direction. Do you have a memory that sticks out that might be like a booger memory? By all means, share either one that you want. I'm open for it. So, yeah, what do you got?
Chris, describe the vacation. Describe the planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah, so last Christmas we were in Walt Disney World over Christmas Day for the first time. And we have a daughter in college and another that lives not – in Missouri still, but not in our town. And so the daughter in college, after she finished her finals, she hopped on in Lorton, Virginia, the auto train, which is an Amtrak train that transports you and your vehicle. And it's got a stop in Lorton, Virginia, and the other end is in Sanford, Florida. That's the only two stops that it has. So she hopped on, took the train to the Orlando area. Caroline, our older daughter, drove to St. Louis and flew because she didn't want to take extra time to ride with us in the vehicle. And she may have said something like, I don't know that it's a great idea for me to have to spend a whole lot of extra days in the vehicle with you all. Yeah, she did. She did say that. And then we drove. And so this was literally our planes, trains, and automobiles Christmas.
And okay. Yeah. Healthy borders so far, Chris. Healthy borders. This is not a bad thing, right? You got to know your limitations.
That's right. And once we're able to speak about it openly, that makes things better, theoretically.
Okay. So you got the whole family down. That's the highlight, right? Or is there better parts of this trip to come still at this point?
For me, thinking back on it, I'm laughing at us packing our little Murano with a Christmas tree and the ornaments to go on the Christmas tree and all of the presents, because the girls were like, we're doing Christmas, right? So we literally packed up Christmas in the back of our SUV and drove it to Florida.
As if packing for a Walt Disney World vacation cannot be chaotic enough with enough stuff that you're bringing in. you're bringing the family holiday with you.
Yes.
Okay. And a Nissan Murano, you said?
Yeah.
So it's not a monstrous vehicle, but it's certainly not one designed for, you know, I mean, it's got cargo hauling capacity, but it's not like, hey, look at this spacious van that we're driving.
We did not have a lot of extra room. And then to top it, we strapped, this was our first trip that we took my mobility scooter.
Okay.
So we strapped that on the back of it for the first time as well. And so I felt like it was Christmas vacation.
Yeah, Clark and Ellen Griswold.
Trapped. Something between that and the Clampets moving to Beverly Hills.
Right. Okay, so we're down there with our family. I know this is not the actual trip report, but I've got to hear more. So you got the girls and you guys just chilled out at Walt Disney World for 7 days or so, roughly 5-7 days.
I think maybe at least that long.
Okay. I got to ask the question. So frame it however you'd like. I got to ask the question because I have 18-year-olds and they like going, but they're getting lukewarm to the whole idea. And I don't want to put you on the spot, but everything is good with the girls. They enjoy the trip still. They're like, mom and dad, awesome vacation time. Or have you seen the times change as the girls have gotten older?
Mom and dad love going to Disney. And I think we've kind of instilled a little bit of like, just travel love in them too.
Okay.
And as they've developed just a general travel love earlier in their life than we have, I think that like going to the same place repeatedly holds a little less value for them. So they're kind of at that point, maybe different between the two of them, but they're both kind of at that point where it's like, yeah, Disney is okay, but like, kind of for now, probably had our fill of Disney.
Okay. So, interesting.
So with this Christmas trip, I actually asked before we went, hey, this is an idea. What do you think? And I think maybe they answered what they thought I wanted to hear. Okay. And as a result, I think they weren't as enthused as we might have thought that they might be about the trip. But that's okay. We kind of learned. And they still had a good time. It's just, you know, if they were, there's a compromise when you go down there during the holidays, because for us, at least, holidays is a lot about family and chilling and doing these kind of things. And, you know, Disney just isn't a chill kind of a trip. No. At least we've not found a way, even when we've got great intentions, to make it a chill trip.
Gotcha. Here's something interesting that we're not a case study. We're not the first generation of this. Obviously, you know, built in 1971, parents went down, but plane travel wasn't so prevalent. So you're taking the family truckster, right? You got the Oldsmobile station wagon going down back and forth. So it took great effort. Even when I was a kid, it took great effort to get down there. We went down there a few times before I became a teenager, but only a handful of times. But now as DVC members, you know, we're down there frequently, 2, 3, 4 times a year. So I guess like the case study would be the kids that joined and have been exposed to Walt Disney World repeatedly 10, 12, 15 times. And now it becomes, gosh forbid I'm saying this, old hat to go to Florida, Walt Disney World. And they've taken that step back as they've gotten older. It'll be interesting seeing the role this plays in their adult life when they have kids. If all of a sudden 15 years from now, Bridget says, you know what? I've got young ones and I remember how much fun we have. Let's go back and rediscover a new renaissance, so to speak, for Disney. So it'll be interesting seeing how this develops, because I know a lot of young families, heck, a lot of our community have kids that are under the age of 10. Some have 5s and 6s and some have teenagers. I'm not sure what's going to happen for those kids because, yeah, I can speak on that.
I actually thought the end of our four-person family trips had come to an end a couple of years ago. The girls had kind of said, I think after 2018, they were kind of like, okay, we're thinking we're done. Like it's not where we're going to choose to go. And we were okay with that. And then it was 2021. I think we planned a trip in October, just the two of us, to go down, and we were going to go to Vero Beach and we were going to spend some time at Old Key West. And the next thing we knew, oh, well, that happened to be the same time Bridget had a break in her fall semester. She'll just come down and visit us for a couple of days. And then the next thing we knew, Caroline was flying down for a couple of days too, because I think she didn't want to be left out. And so I was surprised that after they had said we're done, they wanted to come join us. So I have a feeling that this might be a similar cycle, that in a couple of years, I think the difference will be that they will then be paying for their trip instead of us, because I think we're done with that.
Yeah, that a boy. There you go. Well, you know, it's like that warm, cozy home environment, right? You can travel across the world. You can go to Scandinavia, right? You can go wherever you want. But, you know, when you want something that's, you want to be taken care of, and you want the grounds to be maintained, and you want the food to be really good, and you want environments that are still unique, but also very familiar, that's it. And they may fall back into that, you know, and I'm expecting my kids will as well too. I expect there will be a spot where 3, 4, 5, 7, 10 years go by, but they'll end up back there. I hope they will, because that was what they were raised on. They were raised on Monsters, Inc. and Cinderella. And they were raised on watching, you know, the Main Street Electrical Parade on VHS as you popped it into the the VCR. I expect they will always hold a warm place in their heart. So, okay. Yeah. Interesting. Now, you mentioned something. Love of travel. All right. The travel love. You guys, obviously, as you guys have moved on in life, you guys travel with these unique itineraries. And it's not like, hey, a regular family's thinking, let's take a flight to a train, and then let's stay in the nation's largest city by population, and then let's take that up north. So you guys have these unique itineraries that you guys put on. And that's why I love talking to you, because I haven't been brave enough to take an Amtrak vacation yet. And you guys have taken several. So let's hit it up today. Give us the complete itinerary of, like, give us from A to Z of where you guys went and spent time. And then we'll talk about them in a little different version afterwards.
Okay. And you want to do it? You want me to?
I can do the short and sweet.
You're probably better at that.
We drove to Kansas City and got on an airplane.
Okay.
Flew to New York City. Stayed overnight, one night in New York City, and Ubered to the train station and got on a train and took that train. It's called the Vermonter, up to, surprise, Vermont.
Vermont. We saw that one coming.
Went to the end of the line,
okay,
which is St. Albans, Vermont. Got off there and stayed for four days there, toured around, and then got back on the train, same train, just in reverse, landed back in New York City, spent one more night in New York City, and then went back to the train station and got on the Crescent, which took us from New York City to New Orleans. And that's an overnight train. So we got on late morning one day, and then arrived late the next night.
Okay. The Crescent. Okay. Obviously there's a connection.
And then spent one night in New Orleans and got up the next morning and were at the airport by 7:30 and flew back to Kansas City.
Okay. So boy, this was a simple A to B type trip, wasn't it? Right. Not a lot of moving parts of this trip. So you flew from Kansas City to New York. Is that correct? You flew
through St. Louis.
Through St. Louis. Okay. So let's first off, we're going to say this. The Vermonter, is that 4, 6, 8 hours? How long is that trip?
Yeah, it's, I think we got on it around maybe 11:30, and it was supposed to be, I think it was supposed to arrive at like 8:30 or something like that, but instead it arrived more like 9:30. So it's probably a 10 hour trip, something like that.
Okay. So here's my first question for you guys. How do you guys pack? Or what are your travel tips you can give to somebody? Because I know what to pack for a 20-hour car ride, and I take that trip pretty much nonstop. But you're talking a flight from Kansas City through St. Louis into New York. So you're probably looking at six and a half hours of travel right there, with airport stays and carryovers, right, and stuff like that. And then
I'm going to, next day. So let me talk about some of the challenges, and then I'll let Ann talk about packing.
Okay.
So some of the challenges of that are that we had a flight right? So we started out with a flight. So we have to deal with how do you pack for a flight? And then we had a train trip where we were in coach, which coach means you have a seat and you have storage above your seat, kind of like if you were in a plane. And then there's some storage at the end of the row, or at, you know, at the end of your car. And then we needed to be someplace for a week. And then we had another trip that was a different kind of a car where we actually had a room. So there were a lot of different scenarios that we had to accommodate for in that travel.
So what's like the A, B, C, D things that you guys need to pack in your backpack? Because each one of those trips, first off, I would say this, after I fly home from Tampa to Chicago, I'm tired. I'm jet lagged. You know, you get in the airport and, you know, TSA is fine. But put all those components together, by the time you're home, you're a little road weary. You guys stack these things on top of each other. I can't imagine how that next day you must feel like you ran a half marathon. You know,
I get road weary and I get it very quickly.
Okay.
So there was a lot of that on this trip for me.
Okay. Give us what you packed though. What are some of the things you've acquired over years that you're like, you know what? I need my, this is not true. I need my Starbursts. I need my vitamin C packet. I need my cheater glasses. I need my eye drops. I need my toothbrush. What are the things that you are absolutely required just to throw in there? Cause you know, that's how it makes your road days better.
I'm fairly simple. I'm kind of low maintenance. I think when it comes to packing, don't laugh, Chris.
I saw it. No one else did, but I saw Chris laugh.
But like for my back, like for the on the airplane, on the train, things that I need to be able to get to quickly, it's my phone charger, maybe an extra battery brick in case I can't plug in someplace, my Kindle, a blanket or something warm, sweater, a shawl, and then some kind of snack.
Okay. Chris, you, anything different? Yeah,
it's pretty much the same. I think we're, you know, especially on a train, the window is your entertainment. If the route is good, right. And if the weather is good and if it's daylight instead of night, the window is your entertainment. So, I want my phone and I want the charger and I want my earbuds, but,
we did have we brought cards too.
Oh yeah, we brought games.
Okay. You land in New York and you're there for one night. What did you guys do in that one night that you have? You have actually 2 1 night stays.
Right.
Was there a highlight in there?
That first night we didn't know what time we'd get there, you know, because that's just the way travel is these days. You're not certain. And we were supposed to get there maybe at 4:30 in the afternoon, so we weren't sure whether we'd, you know, how long will it take to get from JFK to our downtown Times Square South hotel? We didn't know. So I had actually thought about maybe getting some tickets for maybe a Broadway musical. And then I thought, yeah. And then what if we don't get to go? Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, maybe we can get same day of. And we almost went to see Gutenberg, the musical, which is Josh Gad and who's the other guy in that you were? Yeah. Because they had like previews, they hadn't actually kicked off the show yet, but it was still like going to be $150 a ticket. And we were like, you know, $300 to rush to get to this, to get to this show when it's not really part of the actual trip that we'd planned. Just wasn't in our budget or time frame. So we just went across the street and found a nice but nothing spectacular Chinese restaurant, ate, and then packed it in for the night.
Okay, and you probably needed to at that point with that long travel. You know what's funny? Before you said Chinese, I was going to make a sarcastic comment. Said, you had Chinese food, didn't you? Because it seems like when we have that experience too, we're like, oh, let's go over there. They have Chinese food. I love Kung Pao shrimp. Let's go over there. We end up in a Chinese restaurant.
It was a lot more – that was a lot more – traditional than our one night in New York on the way back. And we'll talk about that later.
Okay. We'll talk about that. So we hit the Vermonter early in the morning. Part of this trip is you were intending on seeing some fall color change, correct? And that was the version of this that you were looking for, was some fall color change. And let's be honest, the reason for this trip, or the, some of the reason, was you were going to go and get the sites shown to you by one of the members of our Disney community, our friend Jeremy Murray, and Krista and Everly. They live in St. Albans. So that was the connection to the end of the line, so we speak, for the Vermonter. But fall color change, that was one of the drivers as well, too, correct, at this point?
It was, yeah. It was kind of going up into New England, part of the bucket list, you know, on the bucket list. But then when are you going to go? Well, it makes sense to go during that fall foliage thing that everybody talks about. And a year ago, Jeremy had said, hey, you know, if you ever come here and visit, you let me know, because I'd love, you know, we just don't get that much, that many visitors that come up to see us. And so show you around. Well, that sounds really great. Well, then we're looking at our plans and saying, huh, we've got some Amtrak points or some credit that we needed to use before whatever time, we needed to book it before whatever time. And so we look, and here's this Vermonter, and it ends in St. Albans. And I'm like, wait just a second, St. Albans.
Yeah.
Like, of all places, that's where Jeremy lives. So it just seemed like all of the forces of nature were coming together and telling us that we needed to make this trip.
Outstanding. It was kismet for sure. Did you see the color change on the way too? Because I'm thinking you're going to see a little bit of color from New York, upstate New York, Vermont. Are you seeing that or no?
It was really, no, it was still very green.
Okay.
And then by the time we got farther north, it was dark.
Hmm.
So we didn't really know what we were seeing until honestly the next morning.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You pulled
and, in. And Jeremy had warned us. He said, you know, a couple months before we got in, he said, this is supposed to be a great fall. And then as we're leaving Kansas City, basically he's saying, this has been a rough year. It's been so wet or something or other. It was so whatever that he said, the leaves are just kind of changing from green to brown and falling off the trees. Well, it wasn't quite as bad as he described it, but I'm sure it's just because he's seen it be, you know, in its full glory in some years.
It is true. Working at a golf course myself, I can tell you, if you get really wet or really dry summers, absolutely, those leaves get manipulated and they either drop dead or they hang on till right now. And the course is, heck, it's December. The course is still green right now. My grass is still green. It's, wow. You know, it's a weird situation there. So you land at night or you arrive at night, and does Murray pick you up from the train station?
He's an angel.
Okay. So
because our plan we rented a VRBO. Okay. VRBO, and we were going to have him drop us off at a grocery store that night so we could get some food. And when we realized that the train was going to be late and it was going to be too late and we were going to be too tired to shop, he said, send me a list. I'll go shopping for you.
Oh, my.
So he picked us up at the train and had our groceries in the back of his truck, and we were trying to find a place to eat that was going to still be open. St. Albans is not the metropolis that has a lot of late night food.
And we were also coming in on a Monday night, which is, you know, often a time that restaurants will shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So we settled at this point. We were really hungry, being on the train all day. And he showed up with our groceries and the Domino's pizza that we had delivered. And so all we had to do was get in his truck, and he took us to the place,
the cottage
on the lake that we rented.
Full service. I love it. And you know what? That would be what I would think Murray would do too, as well. There'd be a little communication and he would be like, nope, let's figure this out. We have a problem. We can solve this.
He was honestly ahead of it. At 2 p.m, he was already contacting us and saying, what's your plans for your food? What do you want to do for meals? Here's all the options that I think I know of. And he was making all of the calls. And I described that, you know, with a Disney trip and you get to go to Walt Disney World and be chauffeured around by Disney cast. They call that the plaids, you know, that you're paying extra for this VIP tour. Well, Jeremy was the plaid for Vermont for our whole trip up there. It was tremendous.
Okay, for lack of a better term, was the version of this trip that you presented to Anne, was this, hey, let's go to Vermont, we'll be tied at the hip to Murray, and he'll show us around the area. Was that the version, or did you think, I'm going to do a little bit of talking to Murray, a little bit of eating, we're going to do a little bit of exploration? What was your mental version of that trip look like? What did that sound like to you?
Jeremy was really good about saying, look, I'm taking time off, and I can work from home if you don't want me under your noses. And I can tour you around basically 24/7 if you do. I'm here for you whenever you want, but just to the extent that you want to know more than that. And so so I think our initial thought was we were, you know, like early on, it was probably just we were just going to go up to Vermont and play it by ear and see what, you know, mm-hmm. what we would see. And then it was like, well, Jeremy's going to be there. He's going to be a great asset, and it'll be fun to spend some time with him. And we didn't spend every moment with him, but he was there every single day and for a good number of hours every day, and Ev sometimes, and we met Krista for dinner. So it was different than I would say than either of us planned, but it's partly because, you know, when somebody offers that, you don't want to overstep your welcome.
Yes.
Like, and, yes. And so I think we were being cautious with his time and he was being cautious with ours. And so it worked out really well.
I think what helped for me, cause I hadn't ever met Jeremy. We got on a call 3 weeks maybe before we left mm-hmm. with him. And he'd given us itinerary ideas, places that he thought would be nice. And then we just talked, and he wanted to hear like what we liked to do, what kinds of vacations did we like, so that he could better recommend how we spent our time there. And again, he made it very clear with or without him, which made going into and meeting him that night at the train so much more comfortable, because we'd already had that first conversation, for me at least.
That's a wonderful thing to do. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because if you're listening today, you're like, you know, I've always wanted to take a trip to Florida, to Connecticut, to wherever. And I wanted to go with this family and this family. And you're like, but how would we do if we were literally connected to each other for 7 days? And that's a conversation that in any multiple family vacation, you need to have ahead of time, just with the understanding of, hey, we are planning this, this, and this, but no one's going to get butthurt. You know, I'll use a phrase we talked about before the show. No one's going to get butthurt if you guys need an afternoon or a day or every dinner or something away from us. Because, yeah, there's very few families that could be absolutely compatible 24/7, 365 on vacation. That's a rough road.
We talk a lot about that. Just yeah. that even friends, the closest of friends might get together, and you find out, wow, these two couples that are the closest of friends don't vacation very well together. You never know. Yeah. And so having that discussion in advance that makes it very easy for someone to excuse themselves out of the itinerary without causing a kind of,
traumatic hard feelings, you know,
yeah, it's really, really helpful.
Yeah. When we went to Disneyland, we had a conversation and every family got to pick the reservation for dinner on a particular evening. And then we were free to kind of come and go. We ended up staying together the entire time because the families kind of, The parent styles were similar. That's the biggest thing. You know, if a kid was out of line, dad was there to say, hey, you know, or mom was there to say the same thing, which made vacationing better. Because if someone's other kid was out of line, I could say, hey, and they were my kid, and that was okay. So we had a good time as well. But make sure you have that conversation early or before you step off the plane, because that conversation afterwards, you might have two completely different levels of expectation there. So, all right. So we got Murray the plaid. I love it. Give us some highlights of what you saw, because if you're telling me you went to the end of the line in Vermont, I'm thinking we're going to see Lake Champlain. I'm hoping to see Champ. I'm hoping to see color change and some green mountains. What did you see? what differed from that?
There's actually a lot to see.
Okay.
We didn't get to see everything, I think, that Jeremy had on his lists of things. And okay. Everything looked interesting, so we really had to pick and choose and take some of his advice to have everything fit in our, essentially three, we had three full days.
Okay.
Food, yeah, so we
historical sites, what'd you get?
Well, it starts out with, we were on Lake Champlain. So mm-hmm. had we been there when there wasn't a constant mist, pretty much, which was what we had. We pretty much had rain and mist and cold for our time. But had we been there otherwise, we would have seen great sunsets on Lake Champlain. So that would have been nice. And then what did you say? You said you were naming off some of these things. And each time you named something, I'm like, yep, saw that.
The sea monster.
Champ. Yeah, we actually took a picture of the sea monster and sent it back to Jeremy and Krista, and they were like, this is the best picture I've ever seen of it. Krista was like, I'm putting it on my phone. Wonderful. So we got that, but then it was these other trips. Like, and I think you've talked a lot with our friends when they've said, well, what did you see about Shelburne?
We went to Burlington to get a rental car. Okay. Just because it was easier for us to drive around and not put miles on Jeremy's truck, and we fit better in mm-hmm. in that. And so while we were there in Burlington to get the car, we also planned pretty much that first day to visit the Shelburne Museum. The only reason I'd ever heard about it was because it was on Antiques Roadshow.
Cool.
They were there once. Okay. But it's, I don't remember how many acres.
I'm guessing like 30 to 40, something like that.
And it's probably a poor description because I don't have the specific names, but this very wealthy woman decided that she was going to gather things that she liked, and things that she likes were very eclectic. And so she would see a covered bridge that she liked, so she would have it moved to this property. Or she saw a steamboat, a full steamboat, so she brought it to the property.
Whoa.
But there's also very historic buildings, very, very old homes that she would bring just because they were old or historic or from a particular time in New England history. And then she would fill it with very, again, interesting, eclectic things. So toys, or there was stitchery, like embroidery and miniatures. There was a room with just miniatures, pewter. So just like very, you never knew what you were going to walk into.
So I read a little bit from the brochure that we got, and she started this in like 1947. Her parents had lived in, and she grew up in New York, and they were important collectors of European and Asian art, but she liked American stuff. And she wanted to continue that legacy. And so when she went up to Vermont, that's what she started doing. And literally, I can't imagine having the kind of money where I could go, I like that building. I would like it to be on my property.
Seriously.
You know,
a bridge and a riverboat. Seriously. I'm trying to.
Barns, meeting houses, a jail, lighthouse, general stores.
Holy cow. I can't even think. I want to say, oh, she's the Indiana Jones. No, it's kind of artifacts with Indiana Jones. Okay, no, she's the Smithsonian. Kind of. She's a Vermont Smithsonian in a weird way. We have a museum similar to that in House on the Rock in Wisconsin, where the guy just started building onto this and became just bizarro world. But you have to see it once and you leave there thinking, I don't know what I saw, but I loved it.
Well, her family had a collection of horse-drawn carriages. And that's the way it started, is she wanted to preserve that collection.
Wow. Awesome. Okay. So what about food? Did you guys find that the food in Vermont was different than your expectation? Was it regional or was it American fare? What did you think there?
Yeah, I would say American fare. You know, so I think when I think about your question, though, my first thought was like lunches and dinners, those kind of things. But we had snack foods and other foods that really don't fall into the breakfast, lunch, dinner category that were definitely Vermont.
God, and Jeremy usually that first morning with the best maple donuts. Oh, my. Okay. And they supposedly weren't the best. Like we couldn't get the best. They were not available. But yeah, he would just show up with all of this. Here's the best cookie. Let's go stop here and get this best thing. So we had everything maple and everything that's what?
Cider, apple.
This is a 4,000 calorie day vacation is what this is. This is what this is setting up to be, because who could refuse the cookies and the fresh baked goods and all the good stuff? But I wondered, the question was leading to, because you're pretty close to the Canadian border. So I didn't know if any of that food influence kind of crept its way down into Vermont, because you're pretty close there. I mean, you're maybe within 45 minutes or so of that border, just based on my knowledge of where Jeremy's at and whatnot. But okay.
Is there any place, Chris, that we could have gotten poutine?
I feel like maybe there was.
But I feel like I would have gotten.
I think it was. Yet, well, I was thinking maybe at that last that last dinner that we had with Murray and his family. Yeah.
Twigs.
Okay. Yep. What about something historical in St. Albans? Did you guys, you know, and I don't know, Murray's going to correct me if it's St. Albans or St. Albans. He'll correct me on the pronunciation, but what about historic there? Was there anything that dated back to revolutionary time after that? I know, you know, the Green Mountain States had a lot of history. Murray's, you know, and I have talked off the air about this, but anything like that that you saw, something unique there?
We didn't have a lot of time because the first day we were in Burlington at the Shelburne Museum. Mm-hmm. The second day we went driving, and because the leaves hadn't changed really where we were at, mm-hmm. Jeremy knew where to take us to find where they had changed.
Wow.
So the second day was driving around to find the colored leaves. And the third day we kind of just chilled at our cottage. But we did tour. We're Episcopalians. And one of the things with Episcopal churches is that they all have red doors. And so we spotted a couple different of those little churches and took pictures of the red doors. And it was fun to see something that was built a long time ago. They were older churches.
Okay. Because I'm kind of ignorant, I'm imagining Jeremy's Town as a Norman Rockwell painting. Is that what it looked like? Or am I imagining something that doesn't occur?
No, some of that, I think you're in the right
mindset.
Area. Yeah. Mindset with that. There was a lot of that sense of, it felt a lot that way.
Where a very fun main street.
Cool. Nice. Look at this. So you guys end up just meeting in social media. You've got a member of the Disney community that welcomes you into his hometown. You decide, let's make a vacation out of this. And what do you see up there? You find a person that is willing to open his heart and his family. And you know what I mean? Like, that's a great story, and I'm glad you guys made the connection. But Chris, you had experience with Murray before, right? You were in several groups with Murray. We're used to Murrayism, so we know that. And you had no experience with Murray before, so this must have been like, who is this guy that's doing – what is this right now, right?
He's a lot in the most wonderful way. And I think – I said to Chris, my Chris – Chris Malik's going to want to know what my favorite thing about the trip is.
Yep.
And so I got to know. And I think it's related to Jeremy. It was so fun as we drove around all of these places and even in the country. He was showing us Vermont and he was showing us this area from his eyes. And we were hearing all of the little stories that you would not hear or know about. And somebody might not even really care. But I'm a kind of person that loves the little things. And so he drove us by the house where he grew up. And down here by this creek, this was my very favorite place to hang out as a kid and tromp around in the water. And it was like those things were so fun to hear, and also to hear the excitement and the pride and the joy of his voice as he was sharing it.
And those memories like are indelibly ingrained in my brain. Like I know that little sliver of woods that had that creek running through it that he said, and when the leaves are on these trees, no one can see that you're in here and it's totally yours. And it kind of, and Ann said the same thing. You could imagine being that kid at 11 years old or whatever, and just having the freedom of this is just this place that you're just loving and it loves you back kind of thing.
That's awesome, having friends like that that you never knew you had until you go there and they're willing to go and show you that. It was almost like you became like Vermont, St. Albans by osmosis. Like Murray was there, like he touched you and all of a sudden you acquired all of his memories. He wanted to share all of his memories with you. That's wonderful. That is like vacationioning with purpose.
And, you know, and Jeremy is a natural tour guide to the extent that when people would see him, and look, he was not dressed as a tour guide. I joked that he was the plaid.
He was wearing
shorts and a sweatshirt at the Shelburne Museum, and people were walking up to him, and they would ask questions. Now, where would I find this kind of, you know, toys that would interest my granddaughter? Mm-hmm. And instead of saying like, well, I don't know, but that man over there might be able to help you, Jeremy launches into a 15-minute conversation with them about the history of the museum. And this happened place after place after place. And it was hilarious, Chris.
Oh my gosh. All right. So we're leaving Vermont and you're taking your trip back to New York. You have one night there. You alluded to this earlier about a unique experience. Hit us with it. What do you got there?
Well, Anne, do you want to do this or do you want me?
We were on the train and we knew we were going to get in late and we knew that we needed food. Okay. So Chris got on his phone, looked around to see what was near our hotel and found a place that looked like it was Italian. Okay, that's great. Let's book that. So we do. And then we go there.
You said let's book that. So you felt like you needed to make a reservation.
We don't know. It's New York City. You feel like we wanted to make sure we could find a place to eat.
Okay.
We've been places where we didn't have food planned and I get grumpy.
Trattoria Casa di Isacco.
Sounds Italian to me. Okay.
The first word, yes. But then when you start putting the other words together, the lady out front who was greeting us was very much Asian.
Okay.
And every server that was helping us, I think English as a second language, Spanish as a first language. So there was a lot of Hispanic gentlemen in the restaurant.
This is a food court. You went to a food court because they led with. Okay. No. Hang on.
They seat us. And the first thing you notice is the large TV on the back wall. I could see that clearly because I was facing the back of the building. Chris was facing the front of the building. And on the TV is a continuous loop of Elvis.
Okay. Hang on.
All Elvis. Okay. Elvis in Las Vegas. Elvis as a young man getting off the plane at an airport and all this girl screaming. Elvis.
Okay. So was it themed like Elvis? Was the menu Elvis themed or was it just like pop Americana themed? Because you already got something bizarre going on here.
It was pretty standard Italian.
Okay.
Just like
Italian, if you'd gone to like a greasy spoon in 1970 Italian. There was nothing fancy or sophisticated about this. It was like, I don't know. It was not upscale Italian. It wasn't even mid-scale Italian, I don't think.
Okay, so when they open up the reservations for the evening, they said, we have one reservation. Or was it busy?
That was it. She didn't care about our reservation.
It was actually far busier than I could have ever imagined after having experienced it.
Wow.
We haven't even got there yet, Chris, but it was one of the most memorable things that I've done on the last number of vacations that I've taken, and I would not give that experience back.
Was the food good? Did you enjoy the meal?
No. Not really.
It was the entertainment, Chris.
Okay, tell me why. What made it so entertaining?
Chris, you describe it. When
we were shuffled in there, it was truly like she didn't want to hear that we had a reservation. She didn't want anything other than to get us seated as quickly as possible. And we were shuttled down through this really narrow little pathway. There was a guy that was kind of in the way. We got seated. And again, we were on one side of this super kind of narrow building in the first place, long and narrow. And we sit down, and we hadn't much more sat down than a piano started playing. And it was, this is live piano. And I knew it was live because there were a lot of mistakes in the presentation. I could just, but it was somebody that had some piano knowledge and like had some flurries, you know, some of this kind of cocktail piano kind of flourishes. And then all of a sudden it seemed like, wow, he's trying to put all of those flourishes together in one measure. It was like just this craziness. And then about the time that you're like, I think I understand that we've got cocktail piano, then the shouting begins. Oh, singing. I'm sorry. Singing. No, shouting. Well, it could have been either one. Elvis started singing.
Oh, man.
This wasn't anybody that looked particularly like Elvis. He was wearing, what do they call him?
It was a 1970 polyester.
Yeah, polyester pants, but like dress pants, gray dress pants, but then kind of a floral shirt. And he was singing without necessarily any singing skills.
So you saw me. Okay.
What I noticed early on was that the pianist didn't have great rhythm. Wow. And then I thought, wait, this is perfect because the singer doesn't have great rhythm either. And the pianist is supposed to follow the singer. So this is all going to be beautiful because they'll at least not have great rhythm together.
They were Elvis songs though, right?
It would take you a good while to find that, this is another one of those Elvis songs that I know really well. Okay. And his voice ranged from off pitch to, out of control. Like
it was very difficult to speak to each other while he was singing.
And he sung in that entrance way that we had just passed through. So he was standing in the way of the exit, right? Like you are not getting out of this place without interrupting his performance.
Okay.
And we started asking questions first of ourselves and then of the waiter. We were like, you know, at some point I said, it's hard to even put
How
this
does
together.
He get this gig?
How did he get this gig? And then eventually we were like, he must own this place. Like he's got to own this place because nobody is going to hire you and then keep you. And so we asked, yeah, he's owned it for like, I don't know, like since the 80s or something like that. And it's his place. And so this is the Hispanic waiter that's telling us that, and he's got a smile on his face. And I says, oh, well, that makes sense then, you know, and he's kind of smiling. And
holy cow. Did you capture video of this at all, Chris?
Yeah, I did. Okay, I did.
I'm hoping to see a little bit of this video later
and
on.
While Ann's telling you more, I'm going to go grab something here real quick.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. And so was the food priced reasonable at this place, or are we talking about
No, I think like I had ravioli for under $20.
So you got your Broadway dinner show after all, right? You got a dinner in your show. Nice. Yeah. Outstanding. This is a unique experience. So it's things like this. It's these car wrecks. It's these train crashes that
That's
often
exactly what it was.
That often just stick into your mind as like
it's not highlight. Done because now we have to get out.
Okay, and he's blocking your way, and you finish your meal.
He's up there singing. I mean, he'll take a break, go get a water, and walk right back up and start into it again. So. Okay. I just say, I'm done. I'm tired. I need to go. I need some quiet. I'm going. So he's singing and I head up there and he steps in front of me and he's now singing to me and Chris is behind me and he doesn't
stop. I'm expecting to get a picture with him before we leave because you got to do that, right?
Okay.
He does all of this while he's still singing. He hands us something. And Chris has got it, I think, with him. It's a bottle. He has his own bottle of wine.
Nice.
His name's Isaac Elvis.
Okay.
And he's got a picture of himself on the label of the wine bottle in the white Elvis suit. And he gave it to us to take home.
Free. This is a cherished family heirloom at this point.
He had these on each table. And I think really what happened, it was an eclectic group that was there at the restaurant too. But I was forced to stare at him the whole time that he sang because I was only just a few feet from his face and I was looking straight at him. And so, you know, trying to keep my chin from hitting the table. And look, I'm a musician. I appreciate some kind of response if you're performing. So I would clap and smile and try to cover my shock and horror. And so I think that he appreciated the interaction. So we got the bottle of Isaac Elvis, the King of Kings, I Am What I Am wine.
Outstanding. Wow.
The people at the table, like in front of us, it seemed like a somewhat normal man and a woman who was dressed in the original Star Trek costume, like red. She had her, you know, whatever the symbol is, the metal, and she was carrying a tribble, the fuzzy.
Yes.
The one show she was carrying a tribble. Don't know what that was about. She was probably 60 years old.
What crack in the earth opened up and where did you guys go and what happened? What happened to you?
Exactly. That's we asked ourselves the same question, but again, when people say, "Oh, you had a terrible experience," I'm like, "Yes, but one that we wouldn't give up. The meal was cheap. It was worth twice that.
It was so bad, but we loved it.
But we still were hungry." Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that's your evening entertainment. Now, I remember your posts on Facebook. You board the train the next day, and you're taking an overnight train to New Orleans. But I remember things didn't go right here. Is that correct? Did I remember that correctly?
Yeah, it was just that trip was not the trip that I would recommend for someone to take, especially if they've never taken an Amtrak trip before. We did get a roommate, or we got roommates, two roommates, which are essentially, you know, small private rooms. Mm-hmm. But that particular train doesn't have a dining car, like a formal dining car. So it doesn't have formal meals either. Everything is microwaved and then delivered to your car. Mm. If you're traveling in a private room. And the meals I had, like a chicken parmesan, I think, that was possibly the worst food that I can ever remember eating. Or, wow. No, being served. I didn't eat it, but I was served it. And the scenery is really why you take Amtrak, right? Like, it's slower than planes, it's whatever, but you get a view. And there just really wasn't anything along that route that made us say, "Oh, we're glad we took this." Mm-hmm. So that was just a learning experience for us. We've had over the last couple of years, we've had a good number of Amtrak trips and we spent several nights, on trains. So had several days worth of travel, more than probably closing in on a couple of weeks worth of travel. But this was one that, I couldn't recommend, but it's just the way it is.
Do you concur, Anne? Food, same thing?
Oh, yeah. Ugh, ugh.
What were you served? Yeah, what were you served?
Well, sadly, you had to place your orders like the second day. We had to place our lunch and dinner order at the same time after breakfast. And Chris ordered the chicken parm for lunch, and I ordered it for dinner.
Oh, no.
So I knew what
you knew it was coming
was ahead.
Oh, no.
So that might have even made it even worse, just because I knew.
The dread. Oh, no. It's so, terrible.
I mean, it was just, it's, you know, you get your carry out. It's like getting carry out.
Yeah.
In this little tiny room, and it's not easy to eat. It's not easy to eat for us together. And I mean, the best thing about it for me was that it was downtime to read. Mm-hmm. I think I read two books on that trick.
Mm-hmm.
And after going, for me, that was nice, but I would never pay to be on the Amtrak to get those 2 days of downtime.
Gotcha. Okay. So there's the takeaway: is the Crescent from New York to New Orleans very passable at this point, right?
For sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have any time in New Orleans at all? Or was that just the conduit to get you home from Louis Armstrong?
I think we had to be at the airport early.
There less than 12 hours.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
But I will tell you this, what was interesting to me about the little that we experienced of New Orleans was the stark contrast between the craziness at any time of day or night in New York City and arriving at the Union Station or at the Amtrak station in New Orleans and the calm of that area. And you walk out and the streets are empty, not like scary empty, just empty.
Well, it was a quiet. Sunday night too.
It was a Sunday night, but they were empty and quiet. There weren't cars traveling, you know, when you see the car and it's like, oh, I bet that's our Lyft, you know.
The Uber driver talked to us.
Yeah, he exactly. And we had a conversation, which I'm pretty good at starting conversations if they want to have that, but I'll let them go if they don't. And there wasn't anybody in New York that had any, you know, any interest in a conversation. So that was fine.
Interesting.
It was a really interesting contrast.
Yeah. You know, so I kind of would imagine you would say that about New York. I'm picking that up. Even when I take an Uber here, I'm picking that up. But in New Orleans, I would think it would be very similar because that's a city in, at least in the back of my mind, I'm thinking it's always go, go, go. And it's always got music playing and people moving and stuff. So,
you know, I'm sure that there's the, you know, I'm sure if you find your way to Bourbon Street, that's the case. But it just seemed very laid back in comparison.
So the version of this trip, at least if I could, in my mind, just put it into a category, was we're going to meet friends. We're just going to try and have a relaxing trip. We have a general idea of an itinerary, but we're just going to take it as it comes on any given day. Fairly accurate at this point?
Yeah, very, very accurate. We were trying for that. And, you know, I mean, we haven't mentioned much about Ev or
Krista,
but that was another neat aspect of it as well. You know, I think that if you're in these forums, you know that Jeremy is really active in the groups and Krista kind of takes more of a back, you know, stays away from all of the craziness that's in the Edcot group and such. And does the same thing in our family where I'm kind of active and she kind of like trolls a little bit. But we got together and you know, all four of us, I think it was a real comfortable time. So it was really nice.
I found the similar situation. I have found that my daughter and Ev get along great. I get along with Ev really good. And I've actually spent time, just me and Krista, going through California Adventure. And we've been on vacation. I have found that she is an amazing woman. So for as outlandish and loud as Murray is, you know, you talk to Krista and you're like, holy cow, since we don't have much interaction, like, I love spending time with this woman. This woman is, you know, so I can relate to that. Absolutely. All right. Give me your favorite part, Chris. I heard Anne's. Give me your favorite part of this trip.
Didn't I tell you that my memory is really short?
Yes.
So I was thinking of my favorite part when we were talking earlier, and now it kind of escapes me. It's really very similar to Anne's, though. I mean, it was really about not just building that relationship with Murray, but seeing things through his eyes and seeing. I think it creates a vision for the way I'd like to do vacations in the future, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, not just see the sights, but if you can get a little insight into how it really works or how it really makes you feel if you live there, that pluses the whole experience. Otherwise, it's just kind of like a travelogue or watching something on YouTube, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Like when you go to a big city and you want to find the place where the locals really eat, because you don't want to go to the tourist attractions. Yeah. You want to see mm-hmm. how locals really live. That's what that kind of felt like.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. All right. So people have questions, I'm sure, because not many people have taken Amtrak vacations before. Best way to get a hold of you if they have questions, but also best resource you can recommend for researching an Amtrak train vacation.
Okay. So my opinion about the best resource, there's, you know, I think I would start with trying to get a feel for what does this actually feel like. And I don't know if Anne will agree with me, but there's a couple that travel and have a YouTube channel. It's called Grounded Life Travel, I think is what it's called. And they are at a stage, and they're probably similar to our age, but they're a stage in their life where they just decided to sell their house. And I think he's a photographer. And so they utilize his assignments maybe to structure their travel, and pretty much all of it is trains, or now they're doing some cruises and some things like that. Sometimes it's in the US, sometimes it's abroad, but they have a wealth of information, and they don't just do the, hey, we traveled like this. They also say, hey, would you like to hear about all of the different types of rooms that are available? And by the way, did you know that if you're on the East Coast routes, that there's a different kind of a train car. So that means that the rooms, even if they're called roomettes, they're a little different than the rooms that head out west. And here's what you'll find. And that's a really good start to understanding what that experience is going to be like. And I think that because we looked at that before our first trip, it provided us with the knowledge and the comfort that helped to make it all kind of work and feel, yeah, like I said, comfortable. So
pretty cool.
Yeah. So I would recommend them. As far as getting a hold of us, I mean, I'm active in the EDCOT group, but on Facebook, which is where I kind of spend my time, it'd be, there's a lot of Chris Youngs, but if you go to facebook.com/DVChris, DVChris, you'll find me and Anne. Probably find Anne through me,
because Chris,
she quietly, it was funny because she posted something or commented on something on EDCOT the other day, and both Chris, and me, we both recognized, wow, this is probably the first time they said anything in this group.
And I did see it. I as soon as I saw the comment in the reply, I was like, boom, that's an Anne Young. I never see an Anne Young. That's awesome. Outstanding.
I'm quiet.
That's cool. That's absolutely cool. All right. So everyone's got questions. You've definitely piqued people's interest to being toured around the end of the line in Vermont. So I would think that might happen for other families as well. So that was outstanding. I always love hearing your travels. I love hearing unique travels. We all go from our home to Florida and back and whatnot, but very rarely does that trip go somewhere else. So I love hearing about it. So if you have any questions on Amtrak or vacationing in a unique way or packing tips, the Youngs would be a great resource. Join us.
And I will tell you this. We're a couple hours south of the foundations of Walt Disney's parks, right? With Marceline, Missouri. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I've ever heard of any of the people in this group that have come this way, but if somebody does, they should reach out, and at least we might be able to point them to, you know, to some places to consider.
Cool. Good offer. Join us in EDCOT, E-D-C-O-T, and you'll find Chris, you'll find Anne, you'll find myself. We're happy to answer any questions you may have. So for my friends, Anne and Chris, I'd like to thank you. And we want to wish you a great day, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody.